This episode of Outdoor Explorer originally aired in November of 2015 and has been edited to be replayed here today.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. And what is more Alaskan than cross-country skiing? Well, how about shooting stuff? Yeah, that's more Alaskan. What if you put them both together, skiing and shooting stuff? Yeah, biathlon. That should be the truly Alaskan sport. And that's what we're talking about on today's show. I'm actually coming to you right now from the biathlon range at Kincaid Park. There are people shooting in the background. You can hear the guns going off every now and then. It's a rainy day in mid-October that this kind of practice goes on all year long. And so we're going to be talking to coaches here at Kincaid who are working with kids and working with masters. Tom Grenier and his daughter Zoe, who is a coach and also is Miss Alaska and has just come back from the Miss America pageant. So that's an unexpected aspect of our show. And then in the second half, we're going to be talking to Zach Hall and Rachel Steer, two athletes who went to the top level of this sport and practiced it all over the country and at the Olympics in Rachel's case. So that's our show for today as we talk about biathlon on Outdoor Explorer. Please stay with us. So my first guest is Tom Grenier, who's the program coordinator for the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage for biathlon. And as I said, we're here at a practice with some young people running around with running around in the mud on an October day and shooting and. I mean, I guess the first thing I have to, like, kids and guns. Okay, that's an interesting challenge as a coach.
Oh, and it keeps you on your toes. So the biathlon experience, not only for kids, but for everybody here, starts with a safety class where we go over safety regulations and procedures specific to biathlon, but also general gun handling. And from there, especially with the younger ones, because we have classes for kids as young as 10, they're just very closely managed, and you know the guns don't move very much, and we definitely watch them for things like trigger control and all of our safety procedures, which you know when the bolt can be closed, when the trigger finger can be on the trigger, things like that. But before very long, they get quite good and quite reliable. And one of the things I like about biathlon is that it's really a cool and unique introduction to gun handling.
Yeah, well, it seems like it would be a real attractor for young people to come out here and shoot with their friends, you know, and mm-hmm. I mean, whereas it might be a little bit harder to get them out to just a straight workout, you think?
Well, definitely. Well, you can watch and hear these guys over here and, you know, half the fun is the fact that they're, you know, playing games against each other or have a little bit of visiting time or have the addition of cardio, where a typical warm-up for us is to run up to the gong and, you know, they have to make sure we can hear it from the range, which, you know, is one way of knowing they actually got there. And then they come back and, you know, they have so much time in the in-between shooting periods that it, you know, even on a bad weather day like this, it kind of buoys them for the shooting, and you see real progress, which is what keeps us coming back.
So it seems like one of the things about biathlon is that it's about calm, right? It's about getting out there and really working out and getting up to your peak performance skiing, but then being able to calm down and actually shoot accurately. Is that true?
Yeah, it really is. There's a lot of duality, because of course you're trying to ski as fast as you can, but then the art of coming in and collecting yourself and being prepared and preparing yourself to shoot as soon as possible is, you know, it's a very complicated skill set. And that's one of the things I like about it for kids, is it really taxes and challenges them, and it's a heck of a brain builder.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter started when she was about 10 or 11. And
is that Zoe?
Yeah, and not well, both of them actually. That's Genevieve on 22.
Oh, okay. And Zoe is helping you coach.
Yeah. She that's actually what got us into the game is when I was in grad school, I worked out here and I met Sarah Walton, who was my boss's kid, And she was just the most composed, impressive little young preteen person I'd ever met at that time, although I knew nothing about kids. One of the things I watched her do was biathlon. And so when I had my own 10-year-old some years later, wanted her to have the Arctic Winter Games experience, we went to biathlon. Zoe made a team in those early years and kept going back. We just watched biathlon help her with organization and focus and all sorts of other off-the-range, skills and advantages.
So this is really interesting to me because I think about this sport as being, well, the people who would do it would be people who, like, want to be in the Olympics. Because, I mean, for the rest of the world, it's a very obscure sport, at least for the rest of the United States. Mm-hmm. But what I'm hearing from you is actually it's a pretty cool sport for young people to get into just for their development as athletes and as people with a certain frame of mind.
Oh, definitely. And it's very, total physical response development. It's, not just cardio. It's a lot of psychological and mental stamina too. Uh-huh. And it's really fun. But we have this wonderful facility, and it makes it all possible.
Yeah, it is kind of incredible. So what's the kind of key element of a good biathlete? Is it you've got to be a good marksman, obviously, but if you're a couch potato, you wouldn't be any good at it.
Well, it's actually kind of interesting. I wonder if I have an example on the range right now, but I've had kids who didn't know how to ski come out and shoot, and as a result, they learn how to ski, get off the couch. So biathlon has created skiers around town, and we found that in our master's class too. These guys waiting over here for our next session. Biathlon skill set, mostly a little bit of determination, because isolating all the technical, all the points of technique that allow you to place a shot with a heart rate of 130, 140 beats per minute, or it's like playing whack-a-mole when you're learning. You'll get one down and then something else will pop up as an issue, and you guide them to eliminating all those variables and then eventually closing down their groups. Uh-huh. The benefits are numerous along the way.
So how many people are involved in this? The range is like, what, 30 lanes long. I mean, is it like a lot of people coming out for it? Are you looking for to recruit more?
It's interesting. It's a carrying capacity question because, safety being the big deal, you never want more people on the range than we have safety officers. There's probably 50 or 60 occasionally or regularly practicing biathletes in town. And I might be really low on that. I know in the state of Alaska, there's about 200 members of the USBA, which is the insurance you need to shoot on a range. Probably most of those are in Anchorage, far and away. So people interested in biathlon, more than 100 and practicing, could be, 60 or more.
And if you're doing it, presumably you want to race, right? It's not the sort of total recreational activity where you would practice a lot at biathlon and not race, or is that a misimpression?
I have a couple old timers who come out and they just enjoy the culture around the range and shooting, but most folks show up in our recreational race series throughout the year. We have time trials in the summer that are a blast and are pretty well attended, and then of course a regular race series.
And so NSAA is sort of running all this for kids and adults, and obviously you have a master's class, so people can get into it as adults who have never tried it before.
Oh, totally. Actually, the session that's I probably should be starting right. is, I call it Masters and Beginners. And it started out as a master's class, but then we'll have folks show up who, with younger kids who want to get started. And what I'm finding is one of the pleasant surprises I've come across is that running a biathlon class with multiple age groups is totally feasible. As long as they're ballpark same skill level, it works pretty well. So the municipality owns the range, NSAA runs the range, and then we have biathlon programs for all ages, 10 to adult.
All right, so you need to get to work coaching. Do you mind if I listen in a little bit?
Oh, no, not at all.
All right, it's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolfworth. We're talking about biathlon today, and I'm with Tom Grenier. We're out at the range at Kincaid Park, and you can hear some of the youth who are practicing in the background.
Want to chat with them?
It's Outdoor Explorer. Tom Grenier is the head of the biathlon program for the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage, and now the Masters are lining up getting ready to shoot. And what are they doing?
Oh, this is a very fundamental workout. I think a cross biathlon. The pros generally start this way, and it's great for beginners as well. And you can see our Masters class is really morphing into an all-age class. We've got a kind of preteen guy out here jumping in with them, but their skills are all at the same level. So we've had really great success running all-age sessions, which was a pleasant surprise.
What's the first thing that people need to learn?
I'd like to, these days I'm starting with trigger control. Because if you have really great technique, but you know, physically, and you're supporting the gun with your body, but you're jerking the trigger, you're gonna be sending shots all over the place. And so we start with a lot of fundamental drills where sometimes they're just sitting with the rifle in their lap and with a good grip on the pistol grip of the rifle. And we just practice a really quiet, controlled execution of the trigger with the little kids, and use it with the big guys too. Sometimes we've made up a thing called invisible trigger. That's where you release a round, but you have a friend watching, and the goal is for your friend to not be able to tell that your finger moved at all. Okay. You know, because excessive follow through can actually make the barrel move in that fraction of a second it takes the round to, you know, the projectile to get out of the barrel.
It's so interesting, and you know, it sounds like there's so much of a mental part to this, as well as, you know, and skiing. I mean, there's a mental part in terms of not psyching yourself out and performing at the top of your ability, just like running or anything else. But here, there's quite a bit more.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's this great duality. You have your skiing breathing and your skiing mindset, but about 100 meters from the range you start to morph and you switch over to your shooting breathing, you know, really deep oxygenating breaths to prepare you for being still on the mat. And then your shooting mindset, you know, it's getting rid of the distractions and focusing on the job and letting everything else fall away except getting that union with the target, and then a good release.
And if you're working with sort of beginners or new athletes to the sport, how long does it take them to kind of put it together? I would think it would be one of those sports that's not the thing, something you're going to get the first couple of times.
It's actually, that's been a lot of fun, as a, you know, especially for the youth, getting on an Arctic Winter Games squad is a big, you know, a big inspiration for getting into biathlon. And I wish Alice was here, but she's on a college scouting trip right now. But I was coaching track one spring, and there's this kid I knew, and you know, she reasonably athletic but really smart with great concentration, and she expressed interest in biathlon that spring. And the following fall we scooched her onto an Arctic Winter Games team. So for the right skill set, sometimes progress can happen really quickly. You know, I've always felt with, you know, the 9-month program is not comfortable for anybody. There's too much to learn, but, you know, it can work. I think generally you invest about a year and then things start falling into place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a year and a half into it, that's when you start seeing people, especially if they come out once or twice a week, most months of the year. At the end of about a year and a half, you'll start seeing some serious gains.
What about listeners who are thinking, wow, I'd like to try that, you know, but I don't have a gun. You know, I don't know how I would ever get into this. It seems like a big leap to do it. Do you have some way to sort of introduce brand new people to it?
Yeah, and things have just fallen in place into Anchorage. It's so easy to do this. Let's see, if you're so inclined, we have definitely found that starting your apprenticeship in the summer before it gets cold is really beneficial. So we have all-age biathlon instruction starting in about June, which is a great time to learn a whole bunch of stuff before you have to worry about staying warm while you're doing it. The NSAA has a number of perfectly serviceable biathlon rifles, and if you're an NSAA member and an NSAA biathlon member and have our required United States Biathlon Association insurance, you're good to go.
And so you find out about that on the NSAA website?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, just the front page of the site, and then look for biathlon, and we have step-by-step spelled out there.
All right. Well, we'll link that to our site at alaskapublic.org. Just check out today's show on biathlon and go to that link, and you'll find all the information in Tom's program. I should say Tom and Zoe's program to learn about being a biathlete. So thanks for being with us, Tom.
Oh, thank you.
Well, stay with us. In the second half, we're going to be talking to some biathlon athletes who have made it all the way to the U.S. Team and all the way to the Olympics. So we'll find out about international competition and that part of biathlon. Stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on KSKA Anchorage. Find Outdoor Explorer anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store. We're also available online at alaskapublic.org.
You're listening to an episode of Outdoor Explorer that first aired in November of 2015. It has been edited to be replayed here today.
Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Woolforth, and we're at the biathlon range at Kincaid Park, and it's a rainy day in mid-October, so the people here are truly committed, including my next guest, Zoe Grenier. Her dad, Tom, is the head of the biathlon program, and you're the head of the youth program?
Yeah, I work hand-in-hand with him. Yep.
Uh-huh. And I saw you out there. It looked like these kids were having a lot of fun.
Yeah, especially today was a cool practice, because when it gets rainy, you know, you acknowledge that you're going to get wet and the guns are going to get wet. So you have to do a lot of running to stay warm.
Okay, sure. So tell me about how you got into this. I mean, your dad sort of said, you're going to do this? Or what was it like when you first started it?
No, it was more like I was 10 and really small, and we wanted another cool thing to do, especially to go to Arctic Winter Games. And so he's like, well, I knew this cool kid who does biathlon, and then I came out and did biathlon, and it's been a decade.
Wow. So, and now you're good enough to coach and sort of work with other kids.
Yeah, it's really cool. I've kind of come full circle.
So where did you take it in terms of your competitive career?
Well, I suffered a really bad injury in high school. So since then, I've been not holding back, but I've been off a little bit. And coaching has really helped me stay in touch with the sport. And now I'm ramping up again to make a bid onto World Juniors, not this year, but next year. So we'll see.
Cool. So which do you like, the shooting part or the skiing part? I mean, which part is your real love?
Oh, goodness. They kind of go hand in hand, but I definitely think I'm a lot happier on the range.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why? What did you like about it?
Oh, it's just the duality of focus is really cool. And it's, you know, you're in one mindset on the track, but when you come into the range, it's a total gear shift. And that gear shift is really, really cool. It's like you shut your brain completely off, and it's just all muscle memory.
Huh. Interesting. So kind of a meditative thing almost.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of our training actually is super meditative. You'll go home and the majority of my training isn't done on the firing line at all. I don't throw a lot of lead. It's primarily visualization and dry firing and meditation.
So tell me, how do you do that? What are you thinking about when you're, are you just trying to clear your mind to nothingness? Or are you like having some like Om thing that you're doing? Or how do you clear your mind? Because everybody I've talked to says, oh, that's the key is calm and trying to calm down when you're exercising, when you're competing.
I think that's really, really different from athlete to athlete. But for me, the focus has always been forearm tension and making that go away and relaxing my shoulders. And then when I get to a point where my forearm and my shoulders are relaxed, everything else kind of follows.
Huh, interesting. So now you are, our listeners may or may not know, you're Miss Alaska and you went to the Miss America pageant. And I'm just really interested in what people thought of like your sport being biathlon, or had they even probably never even heard of it?
A lot of people did not know what that was, and they would go, "So your bio says you do biathlon. Is that the one where you run and ride a horse?" Like, I don't even think there is a sport where you run and ride a horse, sir. But it was cool. The public was very into it. They got a lot of questions on it. It was fun.
You got to tell me what that whole experience like. Was it fun? Was it weird? It had to be exciting because of all the attention.
Yeah, it was really cool. It's very, very different than throwing on a pair of skis and some smelly spandex and going out and racing. But it was cool. It's a very big deal in Atlantic City, which I was unprepared for. And it was really long. It was 3.5 weeks of only about 3 hours of sleep.
Oh, my gosh.
Going all day.
I had no idea.
Yeah. People were telling me, you know, Zoe, it's a bit of a marathon. And I'm going, yeah, it's fine. No. By the end of the competition, I was ready to sleep.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I would think that you'd be well prepared as a Nordic athlete.
Yeah, me too. No, that was not the case. No one was coming out of that field happy. It was long and hard.
So what does it take? You're talking about getting back up into a high level competition. What kind of training, how many hours, what kind of schedule do you keep for that kind of getting up to that level?
Well, actually, going into Miss Alaska, I was training about 20 hours a week, but then I messed up and won. No, but it's really thrown my schedule for a loop.
I was actually thinking about training for skiing.
That's the thing. I was not training for Miss Alaska. I was training for skiing.
You're trying to do two things at once.
Yeah,
right?
It was very odd. Not how I thought I'd be paying for college. But no, I was skiing about 20 hours a week going into Miss Alaska. And then after I got crowned, that threw absolutely everything off.
Oh, wow.
So now, especially back for Miss America, I'm kind of not quite at square one, but I'm a solid like square five in that I'm starting to ramp my hours back up. Uh-huh. So ideally, I'll be back at 18 or 20 soon.
So Miss America just happened.
Yeah, just September 13th. I haven't been home long.
Oh my gosh, what a culture shock, huh?
No kidding.
So when you are, you know, when you talk about 20 hours a week, some of that is on the range and some is on skis? Or how do you break that out?
I actually don't do too much on the, like, I, you know, I of course spend time on the range. But when I'm on the range, that's usually lighter intervals or combos, as we call them. Because, I mean, yeah, you shoot, but really throwing lead isn't what's going to help. It's that repetition at home dry firing. And since that's no heart rate, I don't really factor that into when I count hours.
Okay, so when you're practicing, are you actually like skiing loops just like in a race and then coming in and shooting and then skiing more loops and coming in and shooting?
That's, you know, workout dependent, but yeah, totally. A lot, we have really great tough courses, very easily accessible here. So yeah, a lot of them are 1.5 to 2K loops, and then other days it's just go around the back of the range as fast as you can. It all depends on where I'm at in my ebb and flow of the training schedule.
Yeah. It seems like, I mean, does it get expensive shooting all this ammo?
Yeah, no, it really does, which is maybe another part of why we favor dry firing so much.
Okay. So dry firing, you're going to be working out all day, but you want to actually see if you hit anything. You're just going to come in and try to do your relaxation exercises and all that.
And dry firing?
Yeah.
No, dry firing is actually something you do primarily at home. And really, all that is our rifles are very, very cool in that they're designed so that you can shoot them with everything set up just like you would in real life. And then your firing pin won't drop.
Oh, wow.
So what that allows you to do is, I'm on a German gun, so I put my mag all the way in, and then all I do is when I push my bolt forward, I take a half cock back, which disengages the firing pin. So I can practice everything, getting into position, getting out of position, my breathing cadence, everything just like I would with the lead, just without the lead and that extra expense.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So we didn't like talk about the fact that you're using guns that would never be used for anything else, or just specifically for this sport.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, they're very, very cool. And they all are, I mean, the range of possibilities and designs of these guns, it's really, really cool. But yeah, they're all very hyper-focused and only used for this.
Huh. And do you, I mean, they must cost a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mine's about, I think, $3,000. Uh-huh. But I've been doing this a really long time, and I didn't go from zero to a $3,000 gun. I definitely had my stages in between.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's like same with skis, right? You start out on basic skis, and if you're really going to compete, you go for good skis.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, and then to keeping care of a $3,000 gun and keeping it, you know, in top condition, obviously it's got a significant amount of effort, or at least care.
Yeah, definitely. Especially when you're training in weather like this, when it's rainy, you know, you finish your workout, you go to the range building, and then you take an air compressor to the gun and you blow all of the air off of all of the metal parts. And you have to make sure that where the action of the gun meets the wood of the stock, that there's nothing hiding in there. And then you have to do what we call either bore snaking or running a dry patch through the gun, but that just gets any moisture out of the barrel, because you can't have anything corroding. That would be very bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh, interesting. So that must be part of what you do with the kids. I mean, teaching them to really take care of this valuable instrument.
Yeah, we don't start that, you know, we don't go, all right, 10-year-old, let's teach you how to bore a snake a gun. Right. But we do definitely, and especially...
But they can't drop it. They can't be careless with it. They can't.
No. Yeah. No, yeah. Well, I mean, they go through a certification class before they even touch my hands. So they, imbuing into them this sense of respecting the gun and taking care of your equipment is totally part of what we do.
Yeah. Do you enjoy working with them? Is that something you like to do as a career? Or what have you, I mean, what's that like?
Yeah, absolutely. I really, really enjoy working with kids. Actually, coaching biathlon here has gotten me jobs coaching just Nordic skiing with Junior Nordic. It's been really great. I would love to do this forever.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, and good luck with your continuing competition.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Zoe Grenier, she's the junior coach. Mm-hmm. With the Nordic Ski Association of Anchorage. We're talking about biathlon today on Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Wolford. Stay with us.
This episode of Outdoor Explorer first aired in November of 2015.
Back with Outdoor Explorer. My name is Charles Woolforth, and in the second half, as promised, we have two elite biathlon athletes who performed this amazing sport all over the world, or former elite, I guess. What's elite? Always elite? I don't know. Rachel Steer is well known to anybody who follows sports in Anchorage as a two-time Olympian, 2002 in Salt Lake and 2006 in Torino. And was a World Cup biathlon skier for like 9 years in the 90s and early 2000s. Thanks for being with us, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.
And Zach Hall is was also a World Cup skier and was an alternate in Vancouver in 2010. Thanks for being with us, Zach.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
And you also are the coach for the Ski Ku Biathlon, which is trying to develop some elite skiers for the future.
Yes. Yeah, we've got a development team here in Anchorage.
All right. So, Rachel, you, I always love just hearing about the experience of the Olympics and what it takes to get there. And sometimes it sounds a little scary, like you'd have to be sort of a monomaniacal person who has no other interests in life. But you seem like a pretty interesting person, and you have a life and a career after skiing. I mean, how much... was it this kind of thing where it had to take up every single minute of your existence to be at that level?
It was a huge part of my life. And when I was in those prime years of competing and training, I didn't have a ton going on outside of that. So there were times when I was in camp for more than 200 days a year. You were living in a bag, out of a bag, and traveling, and in hotels and condos and at training centers. And, you know, aside from a little bit of school, you know, online classes, here and there, it was live, eat, breathe biathlon.
Wow. So was that a good thing? I mean, obviously you enjoy skiing, you must enjoy shooting. On the other hand, they're too much of a good thing at times, right?
Yeah, I do think it really depends on the personality. I had teammates that always had to have other things going on outside of biathlon, and that's what they thrive on is you know, things to distract them or help them keep it in perspective. My type of personality was I'm an all or nothing person, and I really had to give it all and be incredibly focused on that. So for everybody, there's a different formula to make it work.
Yeah. So when did you realize that this was going to be something that would be so important to you?
I think the way to ask that question for me is when didn't I think that?
Really?
I mean, I remember I swam competitively growing up and I was so clueless. I remember thinking in the swimming lane at age, you know, 8, oh, I'm going to do all these workouts and I'm going to make it to the Olympics. It was that easy.
That's always the plan, huh?
That was it. And really, you know, when I first tried biathlon, I realized how much I loved it, and I had some natural talent at shooting. And from there, it was just a very clear path for me. I came into the sport at a time when the U.S. biathlon team was putting a lot of money and effort into developing its junior programs. So I just had these opportunities right in front of me, and interested coaches and travel. And so it just, it was so easy to step into it and make it my life and make it my focus.
Hmm. Interesting. But it wasn't easy to be one of the best. I mean, it was just that you, once you found the thing that you wanted to do, it was easy because of who you are to throw yourself into it.
Exactly. There were a number of, you know, my first few years at World Juniors were, the goal was to get off the last page of the results.
Uh-huh. But you stuck with it.
Of course. It's too much fun to quit.
All right. So there's, I mean, the fun part has got to be there, right? I mean, you read about people like Andre Agassi, who says, oh, I hate tennis, you know? This has all been misery, but I that hopefully is like the minority of elite athletes. Hopefully, they're getting to do what we all love, right? And they still love it. At least that's how we like to think of it.
And you know, sometimes I wonder if biathlon is even more of a like self torture, because it's incredibly hard to be perfect in biathlon. I mean, even the best rarely are perfect, mm-hmm. meaning they you know, to hit all of your targets in every race is unrealistic.
Right.
And so you're, you know, misses are part of it, and yet we are all striving for this perfection.
Perfectionist, yeah. Well, that's the thing. If you're just racing against other skiers, then all you have to do is be better than the second fastest, right? And then you're perfect. But in this, you've actually got a perfection that you're aiming for.
We are.
Not that most of us will ever even think about aiming for perfection. Zach, tell me about your experience of getting into the sport and how it developed for you.
Well, I grew up on the peninsula. I was a ski racer at Nikiski High School. But as a young athlete, I heard about Rachel Steer and you know, some of the other athletes that were coming out of Alaska, Jeremy Tila, Jay Hakkinen. But I didn't start biathlon until after college. So I raced Nordic for Dartmouth College. And then when I graduated from there, I got picked up by the U.S. Biathlon National Development Team. So I moved to an Olympic training center.
So they looked at you in terms of, like, here's a skier who's got some pretty good times as a collegiate skier. We could probably teach him to shoot.
Exactly.
But you come from Nikiski, you probably already knew how to shoot.
A little bit, yeah.
In any event, you'd handled guns before, for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, in biathlon, it's really difficult to go from being a good shooter to being a good skier. If you don't have the background in skiing, it's nearly impossible to really make it at the international level.
Because you're already at that an age where you haven't been building up those skills and that sort of cardio
exactly
thing.
So you've just missed that critical development window. But U.S. Biathlon has a long record of taking fast skiers and turning them into good shooters. And, you know, if they can do that, then you've got a good biathlete.
So why become a biathlete rather than become just a Nordic ski competitor?
It was a question of timing and money. Coming out of college, I had no money, and I really wanted to keep competing. And my girlfriend at the time was also coming out of Dartmouth, and we both got picked up to move to the national team for biathlon, and she'd done some biathlon in the past. She's now my wife, so
perfect.
It's been a long journey training and racing together. But biathlon seemed to make the most sense. So I got to move to the Olympic Training Center, and I lived there. And just like Rachel, it's an all or nothing thing. So it was a super opportunity to pursue it.
But for anybody who loves the sport, I mean, the idea of like living in the Olympic Training Center, getting, you know, world-class coaching, and your expenses are paid for, it almost seems like winning the lottery. I mean, what could be better than that, right? Especially as a 20-year-old, you don't care too much about money. You're just doing what you love all the time.
It's fantastic.
I mean, is it really that it, okay, it is.
There's a caveat for a while. I found after a couple of years I really needed to start finding balance. And so there were other things like music that I dabbled in just to, I feel like, keep sane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you went to Dartmouth, so you're a smart guy and probably not probably interested in some smart conversation and sort of keeping track of culture and what's going on in the world. And I guess, I mean, Rachel, you jump in on this too. I mean, there's this sense of jocks being the dumb jock who just focuses on their body and like on training and stuff like that. But you guys aren't like that. You're an engineer. I mean,
I work for an engineering firm. I'm not an engineer myself,
okay.
But I, You know, I was always impressed by the biathletes that I met around, you know, internationally, and how innovative and creative they were with the sport and progressing with technology, incorporating technology in the sport and advances in exercise science. So I think there were a lot of, you know, in my generation of biathlon, there were some real innovators that changed the way you shoot and the way you train for shooting and skiing. And in many ways, and maybe Zach can chime in on this more, in Norway, you know, a lot of the advances in training came from the biathlon side just as much as their Nordic team. And so I was just, you know, year after year, you could count on some of those thought leaders in the sport. You know, they had a lot of hours out on the roller skis to think about how to make something better.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was hearing from Tom and Zoe, is that there's this mental aspect that biathlon adds to the skiing aspect of the sport, which sounds really interesting. But I wanted to get back to another topic in terms of recruitment into the sport. I interviewed this was a little while ago now, but the national coach for the Olympic combined, which is this a pretty exotic sport where you race and you jump, and how far you jump influences when you get to start racing. And in a sense, part of that interview was like, so few people actually do this sport that if you focus on it, your chances of making the Olympic team are pretty much a lot better than if you're, going to be a 100-yard dash runner or something. Biathlon's not quite at the point of Olympic combined, but it's also a much smaller world than some other sports, right, Zach?
Yeah.
I mean, how does that influence, like, your potential to excel in this?
Well, you have to want to do biathlon to begin with, and then you have to be in a place where you can do biathlon.
Right.
In our country, there are only a handful of training sites. Certainly there have been a few more that have come online in the last few years.
And we've got a really nice one here in Anchorage.
One of the best.
Really?
Yeah. World-class range. And, you know, then of course there's access to the mountains, and, you know, if you're training with APU, then you can be up on the glacier during the summertime. It's really, I think we have one of the best, all around packages as far as a training locale.
And a pretty big, as they say, base of the pyramid. A lot of skiers here who have the potential to go into this, and a gun culture too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I see biathlon as being it's very much a complementary sport to Nordic. And actually, when you say Nordic in most countries, they think of what we think of as Nordic skiing, but they also think of biathlon. They're kind of two sides of the same coin. So, biathlon here in Anchorage is great because kids who are already part of Nordic programs, they can come out and try it. Some kids just find they don't like to shoot, and then some, for them, it just makes their world click. And that was kind of the case with me. I loved Nordic skiing, and I loved it all the way through college, and then I put a gun with it, and the dichotomous nature of biathlon really, it excited me, because you've got a whole nother mental aspect going on, and you're not just on the trail racing. And I mean, when you do that, it's a very zen thing, but adding the component of the range, there's a lot more thinking that happens then.
Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking today about biathlon and two former international athletes who have gone a long way with this sport are in the studio now. You're just hearing from Zach Hall, who's with the Ski Coup Biathlon Club here in town and was a World Cup skier and Olympic alternate. And Rachel Steers with me, two-time Olympian and World Cup athlete for a long time. No longer competing, but I'm sure she could lap me numerous times at Kincaid. So still pretty awesome athlete. So one thing we haven't done, and probably should have done this at the beginning, is to explain the sport. Because obviously it's skiing fast on skinny Nordic skis and then shooting. And the way that that's combined is you ski to the range, you shoot, and then you ski again. If you miss, then you have to ski farther. Who wants to jump in and just sort of give the primer, Zach?
Sure. So biathlon, it combines the extreme physical exertion of cross-country ski racing with a real high mental acuity required of precision riflery. So, like you said, you start and you race a loop. You come in, you have five shots.
How far do you typically race? Are there different distances?
There are different distances. So there are... I think it's five individual format races and one relay. And So for, I guess, a standard race, if it's a, so you'd ski five loops, and each would be 1.5 or 2 kilometers. So you'd ski a loop, you come in and shoot. Each shooting bout is 5 shots. And every race has at least 1 prone and 1 standing bout. Hmm. So there's a what we call a sprint race, where you have 1 prone, 1 standing. And that would be, like, say, for men at the Olympic level, 10 kilometers. And then the rest of the races, you have 4 shooting bouts, 2 prone, 2 standing, so 20 shots total. And each time you leave the range, if you, say, only hit 3 targets, then that means you have 2 targets left standing. You have 2 penalty loops, so you'd ski a 150-meter penalty loop for each shot missed before you go back out on course for your next lap. And it's just a running time.
So, in competition, how many shots can you afford to miss? I mean, I suppose if you miss them all, you're going to be skiing so much farther that it makes a big difference.
Yeah, it depends on the level of the competition. At the World Cup and Olympic level, if you miss in a competition where you're taking 20 shots, if you miss more than 2 or 3, you're off the podium and probably out of the top 10 at this point, because the level of shooting is so high. Unless you're the 1 in a million who has exceptional ski speed on that day, you really got to hit most of your shots.
Because all the skiers at that level are all going to be fairly close. I mean, they're not going to be like, there's not going to be somebody who's like massively better than the others.
There's quite a few skiers on the Biathlon World Cup who cross over to the Nordic World Cup and race occasionally. So they are already up at that level of elite Nordic ski racing.
Right. So, I mean, this question, you're going to say both, but which one is really more important? I mean, they're both important, but I mean, in terms of somebody who's developing in the sport, I mean, which one is really the key?
For young athletes, skiing. I think the focus really needs to be on developing skiing. It takes 2 to 3 years in my experience as an athlete, but also as a coach. 2 to 3 years, you can become a very proficient shooter. But if you haven't focused on the skiing component, you're not going to be a great biathlete at the Olympic level.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot.
Right. Sure. Anybody can do it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Rachel, what do you think? And do you agree with that in terms of how long it takes to be a, I mean, I'm interested in how long it takes to be a good shooter and how long it takes to be a good skier. I mean,
yeah. And this is where I would kind of fall back on that both answer, because I think it really depends on the type, on what your individual abilities are. Some people pick up on shooting really easily and they need to spend more time focused on skiing. That was the case for me. Mm-hmm. Other people, you know, with some really diligent work and some good coaching, can, like Zach said, pick up on that shooting within a couple of years. And it's the skiing, you know, it just takes those years of base and background and technique work to become really efficient.
Yeah. So this is, I think, a question that will be of interest to a lot of skiers out there to hear from two elite athletes, is that, I mean, there's the base. I mean, there's the time you put in to do a lot of distance and doing your intervals and doing that over a series of years to build up this amazing body. But then there's also the technique, which is so fascinating in skiing. You know, you can be a runner and it's really all about your body, and there's some technique to learn, but there's not all that much. But in skiing, it seems like you can always get better and you can always get a few percent faster. And, you know, I'm just interested in your thoughts on Zach and Rachel on that, on how important technique is.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not even watching too much of what's going on in the World Cup these days, but what's become clear to me over the past few years is even within, you know, the skate, when you know, biathlon used to be a classic skiing, striding. Mm-hmm. And then when skate technique came around, biathlon immediately switched over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there have been kind of incremental changes in skate skiing technique. But in the past few years, I think the emphasis on upper body strength and the fact that many biathlon events, the most popular biathlon events, are these shorter, almost sprint level type events, you know, they're 10K, around 10K for men, 7.5K for women, sometimes even shorter. It is you know, you're breaking that down into a series of 2 kilometer loops or 1.5 kilometer loops. So these are mini sprint events.
And for these skiers, that goes by in a couple of minutes.
It does. Mm-hmm. And so upper body power has just become so much more important. Mm. And the techniques that people are using, you know, the courses that they're skiing on have, you know, much shorter, oftentimes have much shorter, steeper hills. It's repeats of the same little loop, and that's for television, so they can set up, you know, camera mm-hmm. towers along 1 or 2 loops and get the entire race. So, you know, the days of going, heading out on a big long loop and coming back 20 minutes later are over.
Right.
It's
so
much more
sprint
event. So
your skiing skill becomes much more important in that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speed and power.
There's a lot of coaching involved in that.
Yeah, certainly. No, I think the evolution of technique over even my career has been pretty dramatic. I remember watching videos from 20 years ago, and you could recognize that it's Nordic skiing, but what you see some of our top-level athletes doing now is drastically different, and a lot of it has to do with increases in, you know, kind of the materials that are used, of course, in the skis, but also the surface that we're racing on is much harder, it's much faster. In Europe especially, it can be very icy, and the evolution of the courses, they're now much wider and shorter, and, you know, it lends itself to being a much faster sport. But that said, if you don't have the technique, you're not going to keep up with the pack. Yeah. So we spend a lot of time, Nordic ski racers spend a lot of time focused on technique. And of course, on the shooting side as well, there are definitely techniques that we use, and those are constantly evolving.
So, and then the thing we haven't touched on is the transition from skiing to shooting. I suppose the transition from shooting to skiing is a bit easier, although you may be psyched out if you missed a bunch of targets. But that if you can't calm down, if you can't get that adrenaline to sort of drain out of your fingers, then you can't really be a biathlon athlete, right? I mean, that's sort of a critical part of it.
Yeah, certainly. But, you know, to be a good shooter just takes training. You know, one of the common misnomers is that when you come in, you've got a really high heart rate, that biathletes have some magic trick that they command their heart rate to drop by 75 beats per minute or something really fast. And that doesn't really happen. In fact, we want the heart rate to stay elevated. So an athlete comes in and certainly they're breathing really heavy. You try to, you know, clear a lot of the waste product out of your system so that you're ready to go. But the heart rate then, you tune in to where your heartbeats are, and for the most part, you take shots between heartbeats. Hmm. And it just takes a lot of time to, you know, over the years, you get better at that process.
Interesting. So what about this aspect of sort of collecting yourself and not just like being freaked out? Is that really part of it?
It certainly is. So when I was on the junior team, we were really lucky. One of our summers that we spent living in Lake Placid, the Olympic Training Center, we had the opportunity to work with Lonnie Maley, and she was a gold medalist at the Barcelona Games, I believe, in shooting. And I think she was doing maybe her master's or doctorate in sports psychology. She spent a summer working with us and teaching us imagery and visualization tools. And that summer with her had a huge impact on how I approached each and every training session and race for the rest of my career. Visualization and imagery were a huge part of my, just as important as the training that you did in preparation of an event, the practice in your head was there.
Hmm. Explain how that works exactly.
You know, and I think for everybody it's different. For me, it was visualizing, it was seeing myself go through the actions. So a lot of biathletes dry fire, which is standing with your rifle, looking at maybe a dot on the wall or doing some exercises where you're practicing physically holding the rifle in position on target. So you can do that same thing without picking up a gun at all. You can lay down in your bed, maybe listen. I would listen to I had some trigger music that I always use to kind of get me into that mode. Mm. And then I would see myself at the start line, and I would see myself knowing that I had done everything I could do to prepare for that event. I would start the race. I would ski the first loop. I would shoot. I would hit all my targets. Ski the second loop, shoot, hit all my targets, and finish ski the final loop and finish the race.
So you're convincing yourself that that's what's going to happen.
It is.
Really?
Yes, it is. It is. I mean, if you practice makes perfect kind of mantra.
I don't want to compare myself to you guys, but I know I've done a little bit of ski racing in the citizen races, and I know that's really true that you're skiing along, and I always listen to music, so I don't have these thoughts, but I have the thought like, wow, I really suck. Next thing I know, everybody's passing me. You know, it's so much about you're like thinking, wow, I'm awesome. I could do this, right?
Yeah. Well, the mental outlook in shooting is critical. One of the things we talk about with the athletes is every shot has to be just like the last shot, and it's going to be just like the next shot. And one thing that we notice a lot, you know, if you watch especially younger athletes compete, when they get to the shooting range, they'll shoot a really smooth cadence, and they'll hit their first four shots. And then they'll take a breath, and they'll think about hitting the fifth one because it just feels so good to be perfect. And then they miss it. And so there's
you don't want to think about it. You got to just do it.
Exactly. Yeah. And so building the automaticity of that whole system so that you can just come in and trust your training, trust the visualization, trust all of those components, and just perform. Easier said than done.
Yeah. It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about biathlon with Zach Hall and Rachel Steer, who are both competed at the world level and are now here in Anchorage, back home. I'm interested in how this translates, because it seems like it would translate a lot more than a lot of elite sports. If you're that good at concentrating, at visualizing yourself succeeding, at calming yourself down, it seems like there's been many situations where that would be useful, from a job interview to, you know, to hunting, you know. And so let's talk a little bit about translating these skills. Rachel?
You know, for me, it was fairly easy to step away from biathlon and into, I needed to finish my degree. I had stretched out my undergrad over a number of years. And when I decided to retire from biathlon and step away, my first priority was to get my degree. So I came back here to UAA and immediately, you know, jumped in and did have kind of that singular focus, the ability to really do everything I could to get the A and do what I needed to do. And then the same thing happened when it came to getting jobs and opportunities opening up. I got very lucky to have a couple of wonderful mentors around town and people that guided me in the right direction and had a couple of great learning experience jobs. And it certainly helped me, you know, all the years of being an athlete where you're kind of out there trying to fundraise for yourself, you're making your own travel tickets.
You got to make yourself a celebrity and sell yourself and do your blog and do the whole thing.
And no, and it's not comfortable to do that. Not all athletes like selling themselves. But you learn to do it.
It's the same thing as a writer. So.
So
I can identify with that.
Yeah.
But what about the psychological aspect? Do you find that you gain something from that meditation time and visualization time that has translated in other areas of life?
Certainly. It's, for me, you asked about hunting. Mm-hmm. So it was always very easy for me to go out into the field and go hunting and feel very confident about the shooting portion of that.
Yeah, I guess so.
The funny thing was that when my husband tried to get me into bow hunting, that did not translate. So there was some reason where the switch to a bow and arrow was very different from a rifle. But the same as, you know, when I'm speaking in public, I feel fairly confident because I always had to be in front of a television camera or a reporter or in, you know, out and trying to drum up support for my endeavors.
Although I compliment you on not having the robotic quality that some elite athletes do. When you interview them, it sounds like, turning the switch, here come the answers that they've done a million times. Zach, what about you? You've gone into coaching, so you've translated it directly in terms of your career.
Yeah, well, the first couple of years I was back, I worked with a company in tourism downtown, and during that time was coaching, and then it moved into a more full-time coaching position. But I would say that the visualization skills that I learned and applied so heavily during my biathlon career have definitely translated to a lot of the things I do now. You know, being good at something requires failing. It requires bumps. And so getting good at the process of recognizing that just needs to happen. And so, and then not beating yourself up over it. So, you know, even before coming in here, I've never been in a radio studio. So I was kind of wondering what it was going to be like, and I guess visualizing the process a little bit. And I think that sort of preparation serves me really well in day-to-day life.
Yeah, well, you seem very, very calm, so.
That's good.
low heart rate. What about the other aspect that, like, you, especially having been an Olympic team member twice and all the attention, and certainly, you know, traveling internationally and then coming back to being a regular person, is there anything about that feels like, wow, what I used to do was I got so much adulation and now no one's worshiping me anymore?
You know, for me, it was kind of the opposite. I was really uncomfortable the first few years after I came back. I still wanted to cross-country race just on the local scene, but I felt this incredible amount of pressure from locals. You know, I'd get to the start line and I could just tell people are looking at me and they're like, I'm going to beat her. I'm going to beat an Olympian today.
Yeah, target on your back.
Yeah. And you know, that took some of the enjoyment away of it.
I have to tell you a funny story. I finished a race and heard a kid talking to his dad. The kid's like 16 years old. And he says, Dad, I just beat an Olympian. I just beat an Olympian.
See?
Dad says, yeah, but he's 80 years old.
You know, and that, you know, that's the cool thing about this community, too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you go to any event and you're going to see multiple Olympians around. And so that was something I just had to get used to.
Mm-hmm. So, Zach, tell me about the next generation. How do you pick out a kid who you think could be, you know, the next Rachel Steer?
Right now, we've got athletes who, like, their friends tell them about biathlon, and they come out to the range and they try it out. And that's really, it's kind of word of mouth. I think biathlon more picks you. You try it out at a camp or something, and there's just for me, there was a switch that went off, and I look for that in an athlete when they come to the range. So we have programs through the summer and, you know, different camps where kids can try out the sport. But there are certainly light bulb moments for some of them.
But isn't there, I mean, to really be at the top, you've got to have some physical talent. I mean, it's not just work. It's not true that just anybody can get to the very top. You actually have to have a body that's designed for that kind of kind of level.
Yeah, if you want to go all the way to that level, but it does take some years to really figure that out. And
yeah.
You know, for us right now with the program that Wiskeku Biathlon, we certainly want to support the athletes who have that dream and have that capability. But at the same time, we have a lot of athletes who are really just wanting to gain mastery over something. And I, you know, biathlon's a really it's a great paradigm for life. It's a great way to teach life lessons. And I mean, that's one of the reasons I love being a coach, is when we're on the range, we're all learning something. And
yeah.
So it's, you know, each athlete kind of chooses what their goals are, and then we're there to support them through that.
Sounds like it's pretty fun too.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to thank both of you. Zach Hall is the coach for Skiku Biathlon and a former World Cup skier and U.S. team member. Rachel Steer, two-time Olympian, World Cup skier, now not doing that anymore, but I really appreciate coming in and you promote the sport and Nordic skiing in general, I know. So thanks to both of you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Charles.
Monica Goki is our producer and makes it all happen. Grace Bogine is our production assistant who helps get the shows scheduled. My name is Charles Wolforth. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.